art, comedy, pop culture, and much more. You're listening to ACPN.
They say it's not about the destination, but the journey. And while every story has a beginning, we're here to talk about the end.
Hey, everybody. It is Podcast Rob.
And Ensign James Hatton.
And we're here for another fun-filled, delicious episode of The End.
I forgot how, like, sexy the theremin is in the opening theme.
Yeah, I didn't know how what direction I wanted to go in there. What's going on, everybody? How's everybody doing? How are you doing, my good friend?
I am doing well. This the end of our first month back in the 2022, and as starts every year, we are really, like, both guns blazing and going at the right pace for things to be up on time.
Yeah, and that usually peters out by about February, so.
Yep. By my birthday, we're like, oh shit, it's Tuesday. The episode was supposed to go up last week.
Yeah, exactly. Get it while it's gettinable.
For those who are unfamiliar with The End, this is where we watch the finale, the final episode of a show, whether or not we know anything about the show from the introduction and the picture. I'm sure you can figure out what this one's about, Rob.
Yes, we are doing the series finale of the OG original Star Trek.
Which I thought I had seen all of the Star Trek episodes because I've gone on many a Star Trek binge. I had never seen this one, which is utterly shocking. Or it was on like an episode of, you know, Nick at Night 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and I don't remember it. But man, this is not the highest note for them to say goodbye.
Yeah, I feel like this was not a planned ending for this.
Yeah, that's correct. It was a canceled show, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it felt that way based off of this episode.
But even as a season finale.
Yeah.
I mean,
this was just definitely very weird.
Knowing what the bits of Star Trek Flotsam and Jetsam I know, like, I know the show was picked up and continued going very specifically because of Desilu Studios. Lucille Ball was a huge proponent of Star Trek. Like, I mean, at the end of this episode, if she watched it and went, I'm not thinking you guys are, I think we're done here. Like, I get it. Because women, man, they're horrible.
So, Star Trek was, the last day of filming was January 9th, 1969, after 79 episodes. And this episode that we were discussing, the series finale, Turnabout Intruder, which is the 79th episode, aired on June 3rd, 1969.
Okay. And then it wouldn't be for another about a decade before all these people would strap on the polyester and head back to space with the movie, the first movie. This one, so it starts with the away mission. They are checking on a sick woman and a group of people who are nuclear something something. It's completely like why they're there and what they're actually serving is almost useless backdrop to the rest of the plot.
Yeah, they're answering a distress call from Chemist 2.
Well, look at you with your notes.
They're doing, on Chemist 2, they're doing an archaeological expedition. So, Federation Starship, getting a distress call. Hey, we're nearby. It's part of our 5-year mission. We need to go answer the distress call. So they go there, and yeah, we find out that there is a Dr. Janice Lester, who is unwell.
She's taken ill.
Yep, and her and Kirk have been involved in the past. One of all Kirk's many dalliances.
Many.
Yeah, before, exactly.
Before we get there, there's that moment right at the beginning where Bones and Spock are like, we're going to go check out the actual problem. And Kirk's like, I'll hang with her for a minute. And
well, no, he goes to leave. He goes to leave with him. And Bones is like, well, maybe if you stay here, it'll help keep her calm.
Oh, because, I'm sorry. Was it Bones that suggested?
Yeah, because she was kind of like, and they feel some sort of radiation poisoning, but she's like freaking out, and her personal doctor is like, you know, we need to keep her calm. So, you know, we need to keep her calm. So Kirk goes, cool, let's go. Bones like, no, maybe you should stay. Maybe having you nearby will keep her calm.
So, which is where we find out that her and Kirk had some stuff go on a bunch of years ago.
Right.
And he, you know, he ditched her in some capacity, but it's done in such a way that it feels like Kirk wanted to just ignore, like, yeah, no, look, that was pillow talk, baby. It was so just dismissive of her, and her immediate issue is like, she feels trapped in her woman body because she'll never be a captain, and men have it so blah, blah, blah. Like, it was so over the top. She's not Uhura, who is an amazing character, an important character in television. Like, they've demoted her to Dizzy Dame. Woman who is never going to achieve the greatness that men will achieve here in the future that is supposed to be wonderful. On this show that's supposed to show all people equal. It's so un-Trek. I was shocked.
It was... this was very bizarre.
We'll get back to this point because it becomes a major plot thread.
Yeah. Like, she's upset because she wanted to be with him. So let's not circle back to this. Let's dig into this just a little bit more.
Okay.
She wanted to be a Starfleet officer. She wanted to be a Starfleet captain. She wanted to be a member of Starfleet. She wanted to be one of the crew, one of the captains, like, involved. And I guess at the time, quote unquote, according to her, this was not a thing that Starfleet did. And the fact that he chose Starfleet over her kind of sat in her craw. And, I mean, justifiably so, you know, choosing the job
sure.
over the woman who loves you. But the way Kirk, just in, like, that two-minute conversation, like, almost tries to gaslight her and make it all about him anyway. You know, we would have killed you know, you wouldn't want to be with me. We would have killed each other. Ha ha ha. Great find. And she's like, oh, but you left and you chose your job over me. And then he's like, and you made me feel guilty about it. And you maybe, and I was just like, whoa, dude, like, she's on her deathbed. And all of a sudden, this is all about James T. Kirk. What the fuck, dude?
To which we then, he turns his back, I think, staring wistfully into the past, and she pulls out a phaser, and that leads to their Freaky Friday moment.
Yeah, so, I had no fucking idea what's going on.
Right.
He goes over to this weird kind of, like, 60s-looking acoustic panel wall infrastructure kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're just chilling out over on the far side of the room, because, you know... And he goes to he checks it out, and all of a sudden it kind of lights up a little bit, and he gets stuck to the wall, like, his back gets sucked up and stuck up against the wall. And she gets out of bed, and she's got this old, like, 1950s TV remote thing in her hand, and I'm like, okay, so now
big chonk buttons.
Yeah, so she's trapped him here. That's cool. And then she goes up and she walks up against it, and she gets stuck to it too, and I'm like, all right. And, like, I looked at my dog, and I'm like, I'm looking from the episode to my dog, and the episode to my dog. And now we'll stay stuck here against this wall together for all eternity.
And that's when you realized you were starting to look through your dog's eyes, and your dog was looking through yours.
And then they did the weird photo negative thing, and I literally hit pause and was like, what the fuck kind of Freaky Friday bullshit is this going on?
It's in my notes. And then they Freaky Friday.
Yeah, it was a soul transference that was done. And this was done because this way, her frail body would die, leaving James Kirk trapped in it, and she would assume command of a starship where, according to her, she was always meant to be.
Quick note. The original Freaky Friday was in 1976, so Star Trek did Freaky Friday before Freaky Friday. Exactly.
So that means at some point in time, somebody was watching Freaky Friday going, what the fuck is this weird kind of turnabout intruder Star Trek bullshit is this?
Oh. So her in his body carries him to the bed. He passes out. But she says to him, and it's probably my favorite line, I'm going to be a different Captain Kirk. I'm going to be a Captain Kirk that's unlike you, not afraid to kill. And I was like, wait, she didn't know Captain Kirk very well.
Yeah,
Captain
exactly.
Kirk has blasted away so much alien. So,
and what about, what about the, I'm trying to see if there's an actual quote in here for it. But, like, he puts her back on the bed, and then he's going to strangle her.
Oh, right, with, like, a silk hanky.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, it was so cringy when he's like, and now that I am in this strong, masculine body, I'll be able to kill you, and you will know what it's like to live in a poor, frail, helpless woman's body. I'm like, my fucking God, Kirk. Jeez, like, that massive sound you hear is all of your female fans turning off the power button to their TVs in unison.
Much like as you grab her throat, you'll feel her hummingbird-like bones crumble beneath your iron grip.
Like, I couldn't believe how ridiculously over the fucking top it was. And then we basically get to see Captain Kirk, William Shatner, play, you know, the fourth character of Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, for most of the rest of the episode. Because he has to pretend that he has a female's personality inside his body. So,
Shatner acting like a woman means... Now,
Shatner acting like a woman acting like Kirk.
Right. Is, first off, Kirk gives these random smoldering looks and stares into middle space all the time. Now he does it with, like, there's a strange thing he puts in his eyes. Like, he just does with his eyes that is very distinctly, this is Shatner thinking this is what a woman's eyes look like. There's like a weird sort of feminine wiles eyebrow ridge thing that's different than normal Kirk.
And the weird smirk and the chin tucked in more and the...
That's what it is.
He wasn't looking at you straight. It was like the... Almost as if he was looking over a pair of non-existent glasses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was that... And the wry smirk and the... The like he already had a weird coin of phrase anyway. Now his cadence was like even completely more so with the little giggles that he would kind of throw in at times. Just like, this is the most and God love DeForest Kelly and Leonard Nimoy for fucking playing it straight the entire time, because it must have been difficult as hell. I can't even imagine how many outtakes there must have been that were just. and just them losing it because of the way he was behaving.
Because Shatner was described as coquettish.
My God.
The other doctor, the one who was originally checking on her, has a bunch of knowing glances between the body, between Kirk to the body to Kirk. oh, this woman's near death. Kirk has to make decisions. An odd choice, but I guess because he didn't kill her, he brings both the doctor and her to the ship. Which is a decision, and I kind of get it if he needs to make sure that, like, he doesn't get found out by sleepy actual Kirk over there.
Well, he had to bring Coleman with him onto the ship so he could make the claim that since he was Lester's previous doctor, he should have say over what happens to her. Otherwise, right. Bones was going to let her regain consciousness and probably run a bunch of tests, and she would have been found out in Kirk's body. So she had to keep the ruse up by bringing Coleman on board, and that causes a whole other fucking hornet's nest. You know, where Bones is like, I am the medical expert on this ship. And he's like, well, not anymore, you're not.
But here's these... we'll get to that just 1 second. Because there's one... this is the first flaw in her gentle, feminine, gooey brain mind. Is all she had to do was Kirk go, Bones, Spock, you go first. I'll be there in a minute. Like, Tuv transport sends him off, looks to the doctor and says, just stab him in the chest. I'll be back in an hour.
Exactly. I was like,
failure in her simple feather-brained mind, number one. But back to the bone scene. Yeah, they have her tranked up because they don't want her to wake up. And our first sort of Bones noticing something awry is this argument that they have about who gets to be her doctor. I did notice one of the Star Trek flaws here is that everybody in red shirts listens to anybody, or rather, listens to nobody but Kirk. It is blind loyalty. It is a few good men blind loyalty.
I don't know if that's always the case. It was definitely the case here. In this episode.
Yeah. So Nurse Chapel.
But there was that one dude who decided to kind of think for himself, though. I'm sorry, the captain said you can't go in, Mr. Spock. When have any of his orders included all of his senior officers? Never. But I should probably go in there with you and listen. I'm sure that's what the captain meant. Sure. I didn't even think he was going to make it inside the door when Spock was like, sure. I was expecting the judo chop and the neck pinch and the dunk thunk. Two red shirts just lying in the hallway.
We are getting ahead, but on that note, real quick, during that very scene, Spock is acting before, like, is moving to open the door before the dude has finished his sentence. He is so like, yes, 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 you're very important. Let's go.
Exactly.
So dismissive. So now we have Girl Kirk as captain of the ship acting like a suspect. And so there's most of everybody else's job through the first half of this episode is to throw sidelong glances. Chekhov, Sulu, Uhura, they're all, I actually don't remember whether Uhura's in there. I didn't
see
her at all.
She is not. I don't believe she was in this episode.
But they're all like, every time Girl Kirk says something, they throw a sort of aside and they kind of shrug it off. Oh, that's our Kirk. To formally have her checked out, they're going to have to take the ship a different route, which is going to take them away from their original route. This is where Spock starts his little world of suspicion because, well, they got a meeting with the, the Pontiac, the Potomac, elsewhere in a couple days, and them side tripping to a different starbase is going to throw them off course. They're going to have to warn Starfleet, and Kirk and Spock get into a little heater about the proper protocol. And this is where Girl Kirk makes her first few mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Where I believe she asks Spock why he hasn't told Starfleet yet. And Spock's like, well, Captain, that is normally the captain's position, so I wouldn't want to usurp your authority or some such Vulcan shit.
And the thing is that I'm sure in episodes past, countless times, Spock has alerted Starfleet to their change in plans.
Sure.
But there is definitely something up, and Spock's logical brain is starting to put two and two together, and he's starting to come very close to four, because he has already been told, I believe, at this point, by Lester, that she is not Lester, that Lester is in Kirk's body. So he already has something a little bit concerning in his brain, and now he's doing what he can to test some theories.
I actually, funny enough, I think that's before, but it's like moments before. Okay. It's shortly thereafter that Kirk wakes up and they want to keep drugging him, and he tells Nurse Chapel, "I'd like to see Dr. Bones," to which she goes, "Well, you're not allowed to see Bones. Captain's orders." And old wily old Kirk girl says, "What about Spock?"
"Oh, but I could see that nice Mr. Spock, couldn't I?"
"Oh, well, that's fine. You're not allowed to see your doctor, but some random dude that you met for 30 seconds ain't exactly a fang." To which she tells Spock, "Hey, I'm Kirk," and now Spock is on the defense. And we move to the second act, and I expected this to turn into the sort of twins thing, like, "I'm Kirk." "No, I'm James T. Kirk." "No, I'm Spartacus."
Right, right.
Of, like, them both standing there and them having to make a decision over gunpoint or some silliness. I was not expecting the second half of this episode to turn into, like, a Few Good Men court drama. 12 angry starship captains. People of the ship trying to make a decision as to whether Kirk is who Kirk says they are, even though they're acting very erratic. But it's Spock and he's saying this woman is a man and Finkel is Einhorn. And it's just getting in batshit. And at no point in time do they think to ask Kirk, "What's your social security number? What's your mother's maiden name? What's your first cat's pet's name?" Like, Google is better at figuring out who you are than Starfleet.
Well, they did go through some of that when she was trying to convince Spock and he was trying to tell her things that she thought only Kirk would know. But even Spock was like, "Well, you know, the reports of those missions have been published, so that information is available."
"And you're a dame."
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, she couldn't have figured out something else like, "Hey, this is what you and I had for dinner last night."
Right. "Remember last week when you called me a red-blooded monster?"
Yeah, exactly.
We did skip over the scene with Kirk and Bones where he's taking his medical test. And I would like to note that he does this like leg press thing.
Oh, yeah. With the two like shoeboxes coming through the wall.
Yes. It's so clearly like there's
somebody
no
on the other side just pushing it back and forth with their hands while he's doing it with his feet.
But shirtless, Kirk now does a back roll over the chair and from the weight bench to the floor, lands on his feet. And I won't lie, I was impressed. I was like, that's a sort of a blind drop right there. He could have fallen on his ass. And William Shatner, 1969, kind of ripped. A bit dad body, but not like he clearly worked out. Just was surprised. I've always sort of thought of William Shatner as sort of a doughy man, especially when you see him like the little extra paunch, the little captain shirt paunch. I was not expecting to be like, all right, he could be like a mid-tier wrestler. He could be the guy that can lose to the other guy.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are your thoughts on the tribunal now? Now it's not just about her, it is about Spock's mutiny.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is that apparently she didn't think this through, and by she I mean Kirk, because the mutiny charge has to get voted on by all of those assembled. So even though Spock is like, you know, "Well, we don't have any empirical measurable evidence to, you know, support any of my claims that you're actually Dr. Janice Lester in James T. Kirk's body," he doesn't really have to at this point. He just has to get enough people to agree that he has a justification for the causes and that it's not mutiny. There doesn't have to be any hardcore actual proof. But this whole thing goes completely off the fucking rails because they, you know, Spock is like, well, we can't really have any real evidence without being able to question the other person who this possible maybe body transfer thing has actually affected. Mm-hmm. So we need to go get her. So they take a little fucking breather, you know, a little recess. And you've got Mr. Scott and Bones out in the hallway. And dude, this felt like a scene from fucking Forrest Gump where they're talking about Kirk. Bones says something like, have you ever seen the captain this angry? And this is where Scott goes Bubba Gump on him. And he's like, doctor, I've seen the captain feverish, sick, drunk, delirious, terrified, overjoyed. And I'm sitting here like I'm literally spinning in my office chair going, hungry, tired,
on
thirsty,
Tuesday,
horny. Like, when? What other odd adjectives can we come up with, Scotty? Jesus, really? It was just, it felt like such padding.
Yeah, it
like,
really.
It was absolutely horrible. And then they go, but Scott convinces Bones that regardless of what they believe, they should acquit Spock of the charge of mutiny just to see what reaction would happen, because Scott is convinced, and rightly so, that she, meaning Kirk, will go batshit crazy.
Right.
They don't even get the chance before Kirk goes batshit crazy, because they all come back inside and they all sit down and Kirk's like, can we please play the conversation that was recorded in the hallway?
It's from here, from this point
and then,
on.
Thank God Bones is like, yeah, I know what we said. Like, you don't have to play it back.
It's from, like, that moment, though. From that moment, I don't know whether, like, that was recorded on a different day. It feels like it was the end of the week. Because perspective and character choices are tossed out the window for William Shatner. Yeah. We are now in full over-dramatic, overblown, explodey mode. Because it's... want to have it played back. He hears them say, oh, well, Captain, that would be mutiny of our Captain. And it has called for their death.
Well, I will say, just because you're talking about acting choices and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
Shatner was suffering from a bout of the flu during the filming of some parts of this episode.
Fair enough.
I do have a note here that... at one point, he had to lift Janice Lester in his arms and carry her to a couch to put her on it. During the first take, he was so weak and exhausted from the flu that he got as far as the couch and then dropped her on it. It was well padded and she bounced a couple of times, but according to another actress who was visiting the set, Shatner looked down at her and said, you know I love you, but you got to lose about 6 inches off of that ass.
Oh. Amazing.
What?
Amazing. Somewhere that footage exists.
Yeah, exactly.
I need it. So he calls for, due to treason, he calls for their death, tells security to, like, wheel them out. And so now we have the band of four. We have Girl Kirk, we have Spock, we have Bones, and we have Scotty. And security's like, yep, this checks out. Totally okay. We're gonna bring these guys to the jail so we can shoot them. Cool. Let's go. And you have Chekhov and Sulu standing right there, kind of, again, giving side glances. And it was Sulu, or it was one of them that said, you know, there's not a call for death except for Section 4 of Starfleet law, blah, 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 and that hasn't been used in 50 years, and nothing like that's going on right here. They never say what it is that causes it. To which, I'm the captain, and I said they will be shot. Do you understand? And there's this, like, pause moment where they're like, maybe we should say something. Do you understand? And they kind of turn tail and scurry away. But Shatner's deliveries here are so good. They are exactly what you think of when you think Shatner reacts. With one exception, which is the reaction of the picture I sent you, which I will definitely put on this post somewhere. Because they're being sent down to the jail, and there's a jostle or something. And so there is a moment where you see the overlay of her face on him and his face on her. And it seems like maybe something went awry. This isn't going to be permanent. There's a chance that this movie might have an unfreaky unfriday. And the mime performance that Shatner goes through. Dude, I watched it 3 times. Not just to get screenshots, but because it's hysterical.
It is pretty hilarious. Watching what can only be described as Kirk's body fighting the invasion of a foreign influence. His body is fighting for possession of the soul that's not in him. And it's just, yeah, it's totally over the top.
Yeah, culminating in jazz hands. And I believe I've seen that as a gif before, of like a zoom in where Kirk's got hands raised, jazz hands. Which means that the process can be reversed. And then we learn the big final culmination of this blah blah, which is... it will be reversed. This is temporary. Twist. The only way it wouldn't be is if they kill her.
Right. Which was the original plan all along.
Yeah. Not why we're here.
Yeah. Is that what he wanted to do back on Camus 2?
So... I'm just trying to remember exactly how the last beats go. Do you have it on your notes?
Well, the transference reverses itself. And I believe she grabs a phaser from one of the two guards. And Kirk knocks the phaser out of her hand. And then, like, judo chops her in the neck and knocks her unconscious.
Roadhouse.
Yeah. And then, you know... can we do anything for her? Can we take care of her in some way? And they pick her up and carry her off.
Yeah.
And the final lines of the entire series is Kirk and Spock. Kirk saying, "I didn't want to destroy her." And Spock says, "I'm sure we all understand that, Captain." And Kirk goes, "Her life could have been as rich as any woman's. If only." If only. And then it just fades out. If only. It's like that scene. It's like that scene from Ocean's 12. And here's the most important thing that you can never forget. You can never. What was that? I'm sorry.
I think my biggest sort of takeaway of this, and I didn't look to see who wrote it, because I would love to see if it was, you know, a sci-fi writer of acclaim, because a lot of them did episodes, or whether it was a guy who wrote an episode once, you know. But this whole concept that she has, which they did, I will say, they did a very good job of none of the men of the show sort of agreeing with her, except for that last line by Kirk, that, you know, men strong, women weak.
Right.
But if the show is trying to show us, like many episodes have, like this evolved mindset... it failed hard on this one, because when she's found out and she wants what she wants, she goes full Veruca Salt stamping as Kirk. I want my orders done. I want them done now. I work and I slave over a hot stove. How dare you defy me? Like, her stampy freak out is amazing, but it's... so poorly written that this is right. How you're portraying a woman who may be jilted, may be batshit, but just if this whole episode is about how men and women are equal, it fails on all accounts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The writer of this episode was Roddenberry and Arthur H. Singer. Singer had helped to write 24 episodes of Star Trek between 68 and 69. Before that, as far as TV series go, he had written one episode for a TV show called Judd for the Defense.
So he's got a court drama thing.
Yeah.
A fun
it
fact.
It felt very like this. I'm sure it was probably like intriguing at the time, but this just felt so plotty and so
forced.
Like everybody was up to their knees in mud. Like that's the pacing of this whole episode. It was just.
The production crew nicknamed this episode Captain Kirk Space Queen. Brilliant. Yeah, I agree. I think for the legacy of Star Trek, which is, you know, look, the original Star Trek was campy. It had its great episodes, but it has more iffy episodes than it does World at the End of Tomorrow's or Trouble with Tribbles.
Right.
There's a lot more of these sort of, I see what you're trying for nowadays than the best of the best. It was important, but it was what it was. The episode from IMDb, this episode is referenced in Next Generation Legacy in 1990. Picard mentions that they are bypassing an archaeological survey on Camus 2, the same planet this episode is from, mentioned because with the airing of the 80th episode, Legacy, Star Trek, Next Generation became longer than the original series. That's kind of a cool little throw out.
Yeah.
I dig it.
And also, they are, like, the timeline was a little off. Because apparently this episode, if you go by his Stardate stuff, takes place in 2269, which is 4 years before the actual events of Star Trek the Motion Picture take place, even though it's supposed to be 10 years apart.
So people have actually figured out how star dates are actually, I guess there's a translation thing. I never knew that. I always assumed they were just like, star date, 4, 5, 4, smiley face. Star date, lemon wedge, cheese wheel. So, as a lover of Star Trek over the typically argued against Star Wars, this sadly is the Ewok adventure of Star Trek, I think. What did you think? Same?
Oh, this is... Hang on. Oh, yeah. So, I'm sorry. This is very interesting.
Ooh.
So, Paramount Television apparently canceled Star Trek during the production of this episode.
Oh, wow. You're done. They're taken off the...
The network's abrupt decision to end the show, prompted by anemic ratings, came as a surprise to the production staff and cast. A 25th episode, The Joy Machine, was already in pre-production, along with plans for at least one more episode to round out season 3. The Joy Machine was subsequently published as a Trek novel in 96.
Hmm.
Yeah, so getting back to what you were saying before, if you go to imdb.com and you check out trivia for this episode, the trivia items below may give away important plot points. The officers could have easily quizzed each Captain Kirk separately on past events and conversations. Only the real Kirk would have known the answers. They didn't need to rely on Spock's telepathic ability, which is inadmissible in court. Like, that sentence was necessary. I'm sorry, we can't admit...
Plot holes you could drive a truck through... a actual poor political construction. This episode's got it all. So what about you folks out there? Are you a mainstay Trekkie? Did you ever watch this episode and cackle about it? Do you think we're being too hard on it? Rob, where can they tell us we're wrong?
The best place to go is somethingcast.com, where you can find all of the buttons and widgets and doodads to listen to not only all of our 8+ years of episodes, but where you can find our email contacts, where you can find our Facebook link, our Twitter link, our Twitch link, our store, shop.somethingcast.com, all that can be found over at somethingcast.com.
And let me tell you, I've seen Rob angry. I've seen Rob defensive. I've seen Rob... Sorry, I can't.
Yeah, no, please don't.
Is there any other shows you want us to do? You know where to send them. I'm James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
We'll see you in the future.
Later.